Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 410, titled Deja Vu All Over Again, being recorded on May 18th of 2003. The title is a reference to a series of attacks apparently perpetrated by Al-Qaeda or related elements in this past week, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the money trails and about some of the untouchable connections that have so far basically prevented any sort of progress in any direction. We're going to talk about some of my prognostications about the possible effect of the Iraq war on the future of Islamo-fascist terrorism. Before I get into the substance of this, however, let me remind you that within a week or so, and that's approximate, of the recording of this program, there will be an article-length, detailed, annotated description of For the Record program 410 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Also, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across the river from Ground Zero, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the For the Record section of the Spitfire website and to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website. By the way, Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Now, by way of introduction, we're going to take a look at an article from the New York Times that was reprinted in the San Jose Mercury News yesterday, yesterday being Saturday, May 17th of 2003. Again, this is a New York Times story by David Johnston and Don Van Natta Jr. It's Dateline Washington headlined, Al-Qaeda setting up new bases. Evidence hints at plans for attacking Western targets. It reads in part as follows. Leaders and operatives of Al-Qaeda have regrouped and set up bases in at least a half dozen locations, including Kenya, Sudan, Pakistan, and Chechnya, senior counterterrorism officials said Friday. And skipping down again, earlier in the year, it seemed as if the group, meaning Al-Qaeda, had been seriously and possibly irreparably damaged. But since the United States invaded Iraq in March, officials said, the network had experienced a spike in recruitment. Quote, there is an increase in radical fundamentalism all over the world, unquote, said a senior counterterrorism official based in Europe. Well, one of the concerns that was voiced prior to the Iraq war was that that would be precisely the effect, at least a sociological and a sociopolitical effect, of the Iraq war on much of the Arab and Muslim population. I think, and we should add this in this context, that it is way too soon for the critics to begin evaluating the Iraq war pro or con. It'll be years before the full effects of that are made clear. There are a lot of concerns, however, and again, many people, and it's certainly not an original thought with me, were worried that, in fact, this would be a spike in fundamentalism and a resurgence in the activities of Al-Qaeda and related activities would be one, related groups would be one of the outcomes of this particular conflict. In many programs, I've introduced the concept of the virtual state, a state but without formal geographical borders. That applies both to the underground Reich and to Al-Qaeda. I would also, for purposes of intellectual simplicity, which, and I understand the irony of me using a term like that in my program, but in terms of conceptualization, people might want to refer to the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s as an example of proxy war waged by larger powers, which to a certain extent that war was. I believe that the conflicts in the Middle East are in many ways a similar engagement, although again the underground Reich, a virtual state, is present on all sides of those conflicts, ranging from the profound influences, pivotal influences in the Arab world, to significant influence within the Israeli right. They are in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and they're also present in a very significant way in the so-called progressive sector, manifesting themselves in a big way in the so-called protest movement to or so-called peace movement in opposition to the Iraq Iraq War, and that's not to be cynical about the sincere sentiments of many of the people involved, but the organizations involved, in particular the Ansar Coalition, basically are the embodiment of what in the former Soviet Union has come to be called a red-brown coalition, a mixture of extreme left-wing hardcore communists and fascists of various stripes. Now, one of the things that has been overlooked by far too many observers in connection with the very complex events in and around September 11th, and that is the Islamo-fascist and Muslim imperialist role of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, of course, has the world's largest petroleum reserves. They also have two of the three holiest sites in Islam, Mecca and Medina, within its their geographical borders. And in turn, Saudi Arabia, as I've indicated, has very profound connections with major power interests in the United States and elsewhere, including and especially the petroleum milieu of George Bush and company. And in fact, it is the inviolability of Saudi economic influence at one level and of the profound influence of Saudi Arabia itself, the home to the Wahhabi heresy in the Islamic world as a whole, that has made the entire issue of Islamo-fascism at one level and the sacrosanct money centers that are used for not only financing terrorism, but drug dealing and related organized crime activities. This is one of the central issues that has gone unrecognized by far too many critics, and indeed the late John O'Neill, in charge of the FBI's investigation into Osama bin Laden, actively interdicted by not only Barbara Bodine, the former U.S. ambassador to Yemen, but also by powerful interests that did not want to see John O'Neill pursue the investigation, because as O'Neill said, the answers to Osama bin Laden and Islamic fundamentalism lie within Saudi Arabia, and he charged that powerful U.S. corporate interests were actively obscuring the investigation in order to protect their own very real economic interests. What we're going to do now is to revisit a book which, in my considered opinion, is the best book about September 11th. The thing that's so significant about this book is it was published in French in 1999, and in English in 2000. Obviously, it's not about September 11th per se, and yet it is. It is the best discussion, although not a flawless discussion, of the events in and around September 11th and the whole issue of Islamo-fascism, Islamic terrorism, and the role of the United States and Saudi Arabia in relation to both. The book, as veteran listeners I'm sure can guess, is called Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam. It's authored by Richard Labeviere, Labeviere, published in softcover by Algora Press, translated by Martin Demers, and you can visit the Algora website at www.algora.com. And there's a very good chapter, well, there are a lot of good chapters in this book, but one of the chapter that I'm going to be excerpting in this broadcast is called Why Saudi Arabia Finances Islamism. What is discussed here is Saudi Arabian foreign policy and Saudi Arabian economic policy, how they converge, and how the strategic manipulation of Islam and the world Muslim community is a poor one. This gives the Saudis, with their control of oil wealth on the one hand, their control of Mecca and Medina on another, and with the tremendous reinvestment power of Saudi petrodollars as yet another lever in this relatively complex international game. Richard Labeviere writes as follows in Dollars for Terror. In order to create a shadow of the UN system of international organizations with Islamic equivalents, Saudi Arabia sponsored the drafting of an Islamic Declaration of Human Rights, unquote, opposing the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of 1948. Although it was a founding member of the UN in 1945, Saudi Arabia did not ratify this declaration and has no intention of recognizing it. Examining the kingdom's tools of Muslim diplomacy in this way illustrates one of the major principles of the House of Saud. The dynasty and the great families, explains a European military attaché, share the conviction that the universality of Western culture is factitious and that to escape its influence, it is necessary to promote a Muslim counterculture that will redeem all of humanity, unquote. The World Islamic League is one of the principal tools by which they exploit Islam at the international level. Created in December of 1962 as an outgrowth of the Islamic Summit, unquote, convened that year in Mecca by King Faisal bin Abdulaziz, its statutes provide that its general secretary must be of Saudi nationality and have a diplomatic passport. In 1995, King Fahd himself nominated Abdullah bin Saleh al-Obaid. One of his predecessors became the vice president of the Majlis al-Shura, the conservative assembly. The Grand Mufti of the kingdom, Abdulaziz bin Baz, is president of its legal committee. Represented in 120 countries, it remains an essential foreign policy tool of the Saudis. And again, understanding here Saudi wealth, both in terms of the direct leverage of their petroleum assets, the reinvestment power of the Saudi petrodollars, or perhaps petro-euros now, and the control of the two of the three holiest sites in Islam, and the fact that most Muslim communities are very, very poor indeed, and consequently are not in a position to reject the financial assistance of the Saudis. Continuing, quote, speaking of the World Islamic League, the League, or the organizations that depend on it, has to its credit several spectacular constructions in Europe, the Islamic Center of Brussels, and the mosques of Madrid, Rome, Kensington, and Copenhagen, unquote, writes the journalist Antoine Safir, editor of Books of the East, last name, by the way, capital S-F-E-I-R. Again, quoting, in France, the League does not directly intervene in financial arrangements. It is used as an intermediary for advising and directing possible investors. It thus lent a hand to the National Federation of Muslims of France, or FNMF, when it needed it. It helps projects that are on the verge of bankruptcy. The Mosque of Mont-la-Jolie, launched with the joint generosity of Morocco and Libya, was finished thanks to that of the Saudis. Similarly, the mosque in Ivry proved to be a financial black hole and cost the League nearly $5 million. A small part of the oil revenue is thus devoted to the construction of mosques and Islamic centers everywhere in the world. Ottawa, Quebec, Toronto, Brasilia, Lisbon, Gibraltar, and Zanzibar. The Mosque of the Islamic Center of Rome caused a great fuss because the plan for its minaret was higher than the Dome of St. Peter, as well as the giant Mosque of Bethlehem. Indonesia, Japan, South Korea, New Zealand, the Fiji Islands, Argentina, Mauritania, and Djibouti have also benefited from Saudi generosity. Today, the kingdom finances 875 Islamic societies and centers in the world. The Saud's Muslim diplomacy is also expressed through the financing of charitable societies and other charitable institutions whose activities always fall somewhere between the religious, the political, and the humanitarian. That is exactly the rub, is that activities that have a religious, political, and humanitarian side are often abused, and leaving aside the direct Western connections, the links of the Bush milieu to the Saudi oil milieu and the milieu of BCCI, this, in terms of the Islamic view of the situation, is one of the rubs, that part of the Islamic theology is the expression of zakat, or charity, and yet that also is being abused in a profound way by the Islamo-fascists in Saudi Arabia, in turn linked to the fascist international of which the Bush administration is part, in my considered opinion, that last element is. Continuing, it would be tiresome, as well as useless, to enumerate an exhaustive list. Let us cite only the World Association of Muslim Youth and the Organization of the International Islamic Relief Organization, or IIRO, whose publications are particularly aggressive with respect to other religions, especially Christianity. This last organization, which funds many missionaries abroad, uses them as the intermediary in maintaining relationships with most, if not all, of the known Islamist groups. A subsidiary organization of the World Islamic League, the IIRO, was deeply involved in Bosnia, and President Izet Begovic regularly traveled to Riyadh to request financial aid from his co-religionists. The material and financial support available to these missionaries, unquote, makes one wonder whether one of their roles and perhaps their primary objective is to acquire the favor or the neutrality of the impoverished countries toward which they are directed, toward the Iranian intrigues and competition from Shiite expansionism. In the same way, Saudi, quote, charity, unquote, with regard to minority or oppressed Muslim populations, unquote, in Palestine, Afghanistan, Somalia, in Bosnia at one time, in Chechnya and Kosovo today, is hard to see as being, quote, disinterested, unquote, explains an expert in Islamic finances. He adds, again quoting, "Never mind what all the official statements claim, it is not Islam, but money that is at the heart of the Saudi system," unquote. In addition to the state apparatuses and the official foundations, these diplomatic funds, unquote, require such fluidity and such silence in the face of any probing that it became necessary to create banking fronts as discreet as they are effective. And indeed, that statement there by this official, he said, "Never mind what all the official statements claim, it is not Islam, but money that is at the heart of the Saudi system." That is part of the rub. And note the areas that that book, again, published in French in 1999 and in English in 2000. Note the areas that they discussed, and note what the article with that from the New York Times and the San Jose Mercury with which I began this program leads. "Leaders and operatives of al-Qaeda have regrouped and set up bases in at least a half dozen locations, including Kenya, Sudan, Pakistan, and Chechnya." Again, the Money International and the Islamofascism International is one of the key elements of this particular dynamic, and one of the reasons why this particular outcropping of Islamofascist terrorism has taken place this past week. Perhaps, and I'd say there's a very good chance, that it was exacerbated by the Iraq War, a war that I saw as a trap by the underground Reich against the United States, and one that has economic implications and political implications as well, sort of a let's you and him fight scenario. Now, in assessing the international financial role, and again, one of the things that's important to understand is the gulf between the Muslim world and the United States, among other countries, in which many Muslims around the world take the concept of zakat very seriously, and yet at the same time the Saudis and the Islamofascists are abusing that and sort of playing both sides against the middle. We're going to take a look at three articles, all from the same edition of the Wall Street Journal, that being May 15th of 2003, and we're going to relate all three, although they appear in very, very different parts of the paper. In understanding the financial aspects of this particular Islamofascist and underground Reich axis, and in particular in understanding the inviolability of the Saudi money connections, one must understand the milieu of the BCCI. That particular bank with strong links to the Saudis, used for terrorist activities, drug dealing, Iran-Contra, and Iraqgate-related activities used by Mansour al-Qassar, and with very, very strong links to the milieu of the Bush family, both Georges Bush, senior and junior, the BCCI and its associated elements remain at the very core of the investigation into Islamofascism, into Saudi Islamist imperialism, so to speak, and by extension also into the milieu of the petroleum industry, and if one looks in the background, the underground Reich and the Bush family's profound involvement in that. Wall Street Journal, Thursday, May 15th, 2003, page C13. Article by David Pringle, Dateline London. BCCI liquidators plan to pay $1.2 billion more to creditors. The liquidators of Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which collapsed in 1991, said they will pay a further $1.2 billion to creditors following a settlement with former employees of the bank. It does not mention any names in terms of settlement, but I simply call attention to this story, again, way back on page C13 of the Wall Street Journal of 5/15/2003. That same edition of the Wall Street Journal has a couple of other articles, one on the editorial page, which touches on an interesting dynamic. The op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, May 15th, specifically page A16, has an article by Melvin Krauss, who was a senior fellow at the right-wing Hoover Institution right up here in Palo Alto. This article is titled, "The Euro Also Rises." And this has an interesting observation about the dynamic of the dollar versus the euro, something I've addressed in numerous programs, a key element of the proxy war that I believe is going on, and the focal point of For the Record Program 408, Pecunia Nervus Belli, or Money is the Sinew of War, that a quote from Tacitus. This article reads in part, "Weak economies are not supposed to have strong currencies, but Europe is economically weak, and the euro has been soaring in the foreign exchanges of late, not only against the dollar, but against all major currencies. Against the dollar alone, it is up 10.5% since the start of the year. What accounts for this shift? Part of the euro's strength can be explained by geopolitics. The war to liberate Iraq is having repercussions. For example, we're closing down our air bases in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi investors who had poured billions of petrodollars into our economy over the years now are concerned their funds might be frozen at some point. They have decided, foreign exchange brokers tell me, to buy up euros. Perhaps the Saudis know something we don't yet about their country's future behavior and are hedging their bets." Indeed, what Melvin Krauss does not discuss is the fact that the United States is basically under George II is running up huge budget deficits again, that the point man for the tax-slashing Republican agenda is Grover Norquist, who is also the point man for the Islamist links to the Republican ethnic outreach organization, including concrete evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, and Hamas. And this is a connection that has been largely overlooked by just about everybody. The March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids that were precipitated by the lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian by John Loftus, the heroic John Loftus, precipitated not only the 2002 Green Quest raids, but the lawsuit against the Saudi elite. And all sides of the political spectrum have chosen to ignore that very all but ignore that very, very significant series of developments. On the very front page of that, the front page of the Wall Street Journal of that same day, that being Thursday, May 15th of 2003, the lead story, or the second lead story, is a story that relates directly not only to the issue of Saudi investors investing in euros as opposed to dollars, but also the issue of the BCCI, and beyond that, the issue of the economic and Islamist aspects to Saudi Islamo-imperialism and Islamo-fascism. And bear in mind the fact that activities which are political, humanitarian, and financial dovetail for the Saudis. Again, Wall Street Journal, 5 15th, 2003, on page 1, there's an article by Keith Johnson, Dateline Madrid, and headlined, "Mapping the Trail of Terror Money Proves Daunting." And again, so something might help people to map that is the book Dollars for Terror. It's subtitled, "Spanish police thought they had Al-Qaeda financier, but the case is, quote, bogged down," unquote. This refers to Mohammed Galeb Kalaji Zoyadi, a Syrian-born businessman who has apparently been engaged in financial transactions with elements of Al-Qaeda. And as we will see, the connections go to some of the very significant names in Saudi finance. And beyond that, one of the things that is most significant about the question of the Iraq war is the extent to which not only the proxy war itself, but also the U.S. flouting of international law and the rather cynical diplomacy that was engaged in by the United States, by the way, matched almost tit for tat, so to speak, by the French and the Germans in that regard. But the fact that the United States basically kissed off an awful lot of world opinion is something that may very well play into the hands of the Islamo-fascists and the underground Reich, and the willingness of police and intelligence agencies around the world to maintain the heat on Al-Qaeda and related Islamo-fascist terrorists is one of the key questions that looms in the background. This article reads in part, "When Mohammed Galeb Kalaji Zoyadi was arrested here, that being Madrid, in April of 2002, Spanish police thought they had captured an important Al-Qaeda financier. Along with a suspect, investigators nabbed thousands of pages of records that laid out financial and personal contacts with a rogues gallery of accused and convicted Islamist terrorists. The contacts included suspected members of the Hamburg cell that helped plot the September 11th attacks. Over 6 years, hundreds of thousands of dollars flowed from Mr. Galeb's bank accounts to alleged radicals throughout Europe, the records show. Here, investigators said, was the Al-Qaeda paymaster in the West, the key to unraveling the group's money trail. Skipping down. The problem? While investigators suspect Mr. Galeb has helped finance a network of terror, another plausible interpretation of the facts, and the one his backers assert, is that in most instances he was merely making charitable donations, again highlighting the whole dilemma from Dollars for Terror. Continuing, some of his seemingly suspicious financial practices may reflect tax cheating, but nothing more, Mr. Galeb's lawyer says. Mr. Galeb's alleged tie to the Hamburg cell was in fact a mundane transaction related to the purchase of a used German car, the attorney adds. Investigators in other countries are grappling with similarly ambiguous situations. In Germany, one of Mr. Galeb's business partners, Mamoun Darkazanli, had financial dealings with suspected members of the Hamburg Al-Qaeda cell, but there too, investigators aren't sure they can prove criminal intent, and as a result, they haven't arrested Mr. Darkazanli. And we're going to be taking a look at the German behavior vis-a-vis the ironically named Islamist Christian Gonsharski in the second half of this program. We dealt with Gonsharski and the very curious German behavior vis-a-vis his situation in, among other programs, for the record, 393. And we're going to be taking a look at Mr. Galeb's links with a number of suspicious individuals, people who certainly appear to have been involved with Islamist terrorism. And we're going to take a look at his financial relationship with the Al-Raji Banking and Investment Corporation in Jeddah, the Al-Raji family, one of the most wealthy and powerful in Saudi Arabia, and an organization with many links to not only the Muslim Brotherhood, the most important of the Islamo-fascist organizations, but also through the milieu of Grover Norquist, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, and the Operation Green Quest raids, to the Republican Party itself and to the political apparatus surrounding George Bush. But that, however, is something we're going to be taking a look at inside two of the program. Within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast, there will be an article-length, detailed, annotated description of For the Record Program 410 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. That website is equipped with real audio and has the most recent pair of half-hour segments available for download only on real audio for about a week or so after the program has been recorded. And note that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only on a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Radio stations that wish to air For the Record should contact Spitfire, and they will send the CDs free of charge. This, by the way, is not a privilege to be abused. A radio station recently got busted, so to speak, for not airing the programs but requesting a subscription. So do note that for purposes. Spitfire is not a wealthy operation. It's run by one person, and I don't get a bloody dime from any of this. So do not abuse the privilege, okay? This is the opposite of Islamo-fascist Saudi terrorism. This is the opposite end of the money coin, so to speak. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 410, being recorded on May 18th of 2003, entitled Deja Vu All Over Again. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.